In the 18th incarnation, the Lord appeared as King Rama. In order to perform some pleasing work for the demigods, he exhibited superhuman powers by controlling the Indian Ocean and then killing the atheist King Ravana, who was on the other side of the sea. The personality of Godhead, Sri Rama, assumed the form of a human being and then appeared on the earth for the purpose of doing some pleasing work for the demigods, for the administrative personalities to maintain the order of the universe. Sometimes great demons and atheists like Ravana and Hiranyakashipu and many others become very famous due to advancing material civilization by the help of material science, other activities with a spirit of challenging the established order of the Lord. For example, the attempt to fly to other planets by material means is a challenge to the established order. The conditions of each and every planet are different, and different classes of human beings are accommodated there for particular purposes mentioned in the codes of the Lord. But puffed up by tiny success in material advancement, sometimes the godless materialists challenge the existence of God. Ravana was one of them, and he wanted to deploy ordinary men to the planets of Indra, the heavenly planet, by material means without consideration of necessary qualifications. He wanted a staircase to be built up directly reaching the heavenly planet so that people might not be required to undergo the routine of pious work necessary to enter the planet. He also wanted to perform other acts against the established rule of the Lord. He even challenged the authority of Lord Rama, the personality of Godhead, and kidnapped his wife Sita. Of course, Lord Ram came to chastise this atheist, answering the prayer and desire of the demigods. He therefore took up the challenge of Ravana, and the complete activity is the highest subject of the Ramayana. Because Lord Ramchandra was the personality of Godhead, he exhibited superhuman activities which no human being, including the material advanced Ravana, could perform. Lord Ramchandra prepared a royal road on the Indian Ocean with stones that floated on the water. The modern scientists have done research in the area of weightlessness, but it is not possible to bring in weightlessness anywhere and everywhere. But because weightlessness is the creation of the Lord by which he can make the gigantic planets fly and float in the air, he made the stones, even within this earth, to be weightless and prepared a stone bridge on the sea without any supporting pillar. This is the display of the power of God.
If you'd like to continue.
Okay, so we have a very beautiful PowerPoint show. It shows Ramachandra with his bow and arrows, ready to punch holes in Ravana. Then we went ahead to, let me see here, Naradeva Twam Apana Surya Karya Chikirshaya Samudra Nigra Hagani Chakre Viryani Ataparam. And, of course, word-by-word meaning. In the 18th incarnation, the Lord appeared as King Rama in order to perform some pleasing work for the demigods. He exhibited superhuman powers by controlling the Indian Ocean and then killing the atheistic King Ravana, who was on the other side of the sea. And then before we went to the purport, we actually looked at the actual chapter, which is 1:3:26-29, we extracted those verses, and Sukadeva Goswami said to the sages, O Brahmanas, the incarnations of the Lord are innumerable, like rivulets flowing from inexhaustible sources of water. All the rishis, manus, demigods, and descendants of Manu, who are especially powerful, are plenary portions or portions of plenary portions of the Lord. This also includes the Prajapatis. All of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. But Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets whenever there is a disturbance created by the atheists. The Lord incarnates to protect the theists. Of course, this is the, 128? And this, of course, is described as the Paribhasa Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because, you know, philosophy, so many things are given in different Puranas, different texts like that. But here especially, it's establishing that Krishna is the original form, the most intimate form of the Supreme Lord. So this verse, Ete Chamsa Sakalpum Sam Krishnashtu Bhagavan Swayam, it's worth memorizing if you haven't memorized it already. And it's not just to argue with atheists whether there's a God or not, but it's to argue with people what is the most intimate form. Swayam Bhagavan. And the next 29, Sudha Goswami continues, whoever carefully recites the mysterious appearances of the Lord with devotion in the morning and in the evening, it's relief from all miseries of life. Okay. So we're doing this now. Every morning we have these nice classes on these avatars. And of course, it goes eventually to Krishna, who's the avatar avataree. And we were hearing the killing of Trinavarta, I think it's that chapter. And in the beginning, Prabhupada takes time to say that simply by hearing about the Supreme Lord, one can evolve to the same platform as the Lord himself. And Vyasadeva is so kindly given us so many stories about different incarnations and pastimes, which are naturally very attractive and appealing. So, just by hearing these, we can become totally spiritually situated. Then Prabhupada says, we've also created this Krishna treatise, you know, Krishna book, for the same purpose. So such a central book on all of our activities, our lives. I like very much the big original one, the big one, you know, which is 8.5 by 11 with almost 14-point type. So it's very much like for meditation, contemplation. And so very much, you know, we don't have to do so much. You know? And Krishna will take care of everything if we can just become Krishna conscious. So in the purport, you've already read this, the personality of God is Sri Rama, assumed the form of a human being and appeared in the earth for the purpose of doing some pleasing work for the demigods and the administrative personalities to maintain the order of the universe. Sometimes great demons and atheists like Ravana and Hiranyakasipu and many others become famous due to advancing material civilization by the help of material science and other activities with the spirit of challenging the established order of the Lord. For example, the attempt to fly to other planets by material means is a challenge to the established order. The conditions of each and every planet are different, and different classes of human beings are accommodated there for particular purposes. Okay. Recent. I think I have. Let me see. Yeah. Because my version I'm using, an older version. Okay. For example, the attempt to fly to other planets by material means is a challenge to the established order. So then we have a nice picture of the, I guess it was the Saturn 3C taking off with the Apollo mission. And that rocket was like so big. It had, basically, it was three rockets, you know, attached to the base of the column. And the actual rocket itself was as tall as the United Nations building in Washington, D.C. And when you put it, they built a hangar for it when they were building this thing. But the hangar was so big inside that it created weather differences in the outside atmosphere. So they started having clouds forming inside the hangar and started having thunderstorms, electric shocks inside the thing. Yeah. And each pod produces 250,000 pounds of thrust. So the thing all together produces about 750,000 pounds of thrust. Okay. So when they first experimented with the thing, they moved all the television cameras back, like, you know, 1 mile or something, 2 miles. And they weren't sure that when they said, "We're not sure when we fire this rocket, if the rocket is going to go up or Florida is going to go down." So anyway, it worked most of the time, as we know, and sometimes it didn't work, and when it didn't work, it was really dramatic. Yeah. There were jokes about that from Australia. NASA, what does NASA mean? Need another 7 astronauts. Yeah. So they also have a picture of this, of the famous picture of the astronauts supposedly standing on the moon, although some people say he was standing in New Mexico with the American flag. So definitely this is an attempt to challenge the established order of the Lord. The public goes on. The conditions of each and every planet are different, and different classes of human beings are accommodated there for particular purposes mentioned in the codes of the Lord. So in our graphics, you have a picture of a tiger, a gorilla, a rooster, and a teddy bear. Each accommodated on different planets. Of course, again, these are we always make this point that these are just different dimensions. Probably even mentions that in terms of going to the moon, that it's a subtle planet, and maybe they went to something else, you know, a grosser level like that. But they didn't go to the higher level, things like that. Even right now, and all of us were in a certain place, but on a more subtle level or different level, electromagnetic level, we're surrounded by thousands of phone conversations, images, things like that. But we don't experience them because we're on the visual level for the most part. So these different lokas are for different people for different purposes. But, Prabhupada continues, puffed up by tiny success in material advancement, sometimes the godless materialists challenge the existence of God. And then we had this, remember when we were children even, there was this very famous poem. It was by a Royal Canadian Air Force officer who was killed in 1941. I don't know what that was. And here's the poem he wrote, which is very famous. If you look on the internet for High Flight. "Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter's silvered wings. Sunward I have climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds and done 100 things you have not dreamed of." So arrogant, it's unbelievable. "Wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence, high in the sunlit silence. Hovering there, I've chased the shouting wind along and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air." It's a good poem for a demon. Yeah. "Up, up, long, delirious, burning blue, I've topped the windswept heights with easy grace." This guy was an incarnation of Rama. This poem is so incredible. "Where never lark or even eagle flew, and while with silent, lifting mind I've trod the high, untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touch the face of God." Which I, for some reason, I hadn't found it before. It's one of the most arrogant things I think probably exists on the face of the earth. Anyway, it's points out many things that Ravana was a very attractive fellow. He kidnapped all these young girls. He was like 12 years old or something, but, you know, daughters of princesses. And they were wailing and crying, you know. He put them in the back of his Cadillac, convertible Cadillac, and took them back to Lanka. But when he got there, he sweet-talked them and wooed them and everything else. And finally, they all agreed to become his wives. As far as I know, there was, practically speaking, none of them who he forced into a relationship because he was cursed. And so if you hear this poem, for example, it's such beautiful, you know, quality in terms of poetry. You know, there are all the qualities like that. But you look at the content, and Hanuman, when he saw Ravana lying on his bed there, drunk, asleep, he looked at him. He was shocked, you know. And he said, "My God, if he hadn't become unrighteous, he could have become the shelter of all the gods in heaven." Mm-hmm. So he was a very great person. Of course, we know he was Hiranyakasipu. He was it Jai? I guess he was Jai, the gatekeeper of Vaikuntha. You know, to take birth as a human being. So this is, of course, the whole demoniac mentality, and so well illustrated. And again, the thing is, many times it comes to us in very beautiful form. It doesn't necessarily come in an obvious form that we can see if we feel it's attacking us. Sometimes it comes very softly, appearing as truth. In fact, it's usually the way it comes. Usually it comes softly, appearing as truth. Then we become seduced to become the brides of Ravana. Okay, let's go on here from our John Gillespie. Ravana was one of them. He wanted to deport ordinary men to the planet of Indra, heaven, by material means, without consideration of the necessary qualifications. We have a nice picture of Ravana with 10 heads. He wanted a staircase to be built up directly reaching the heavenly planet so that people might not be required to undergo the routine of pious work necessary to enter that planet. He also wanted to perform other acts against the established order of the Lord. He even challenged the authority of Sri Rama, the personality of Godhead, and kidnapped his wife. And then we have a picture from the internet. And this one is so beautiful. I've seen it here and there. And I don't know where it's from, but it must be a very old picture. And it shows Ravana, you know, flying in the air and holding Sita. And he's just chopped the wing off of Jatayu. And Sita's looking in complete, you know, distress, crying like that. Now, Ravana came and described this guise, this very saintly person, saintly Brahmin. And then he tricked Sita into coming outside the protective line, which apparently doesn't appear in the Valmiki Ramayana. Heard that. Hmm. Maybe it's only in the Tulsidas or something. Or it might be that. Also is the Adhyatmika Ramayana, the Brahmanda Purana. So then he kidnapped her and was going to leave, and everybody wanted to help her, but everybody was terrified of Ravana. And she started crying out, "Ram, Lakshman." Of course, she was the most, you know, nice, pure, simple, innocent girl. Can't come any, you know, except for, you know, of course, she'd run around too. But you use meters, you realize you admitted to have no, like, feeling of competition with her or anything else. She's a nice person and so pure. And so when she was being kidnapped and calling out, "Ram, Lakshman, Ram, Lakshman," and maybe feeling, "My God, I got myself in this, I fixed myself. If I hadn't disobeyed the instructions of my husband and insulted my guru, Lakshman, I'd be okay." So now what anxiety she must be feeling. And so when she was calling out like that, she said that it was so pitiful that the entire universe went off of its axis. That the rotation of the universe, it penetrated every single level of the universe. And all living creatures were suffering, and the demigods were saying, there is no gentleness, there is no mercy. So very, very intense moment. And Brahma was also very touched. And he said, yes, it's very sad. He said, but our purpose is accomplished. Ravana is a dead man. So at that point, there's actually even a song that said, Hanuman singing. And he says, Ravana's death was born the moment he kidnapped you. So we see that. We don't harvest in the same season we plant. So many intense lessons from the Ramayana. So Ravana, so many people, other demons, everybody told him not to try and do this. Just enjoy yourself, life the way it is. But of course he was inspired by Supranaka, who wanted to get her revenge. Okay. Go ahead here. Of course, Lord Ram came to chastise this atheist, answering the prayer and desire of the demigods. He therefore took up the challenge of Ravana, and a complete activity is the subject matter of the Ramayana. So here we found a nice picture of the Ramayana. Some of these pictures come and go, So if you do like the search, you find a nice one, of course, it's good to catch them. This is a nice one. It's a composite picture. It shows Lanka. It's a very beautiful, opulent place. It was very nice. Yeah. All nice palaces. This is all Treta Yuga. So it was very subtle. Lanka originally belonged to Kuvera. It was a wonderful place, but Ravana stole it along with the Pushpa Vimana. And then, and also two Rakshasas, they're man-eaters. In some ways, there's no criticism of them because that's just their nature. But they're meant to eat bad people like that. Eat evil people. There's something like that, It's meant to eat pious people. But the unfortunate thing is that pious people taste better. So they were out to find brahmanas who didn't wash their mouth within 3 minutes after finishing eating. There's something they would find, like any kind of rules to things to try to avoid being sinful, but to get better food. And of course, by nature, arrogant. The prophet says Gandharva's fairies. And as far as I can understand from our Western tradition, the trolls are Rakshasas, the shape changers, so many things. And they exist on a more subtle platform, where it's finer, better. And they probably don't come down to the human level, the gross level so much during Kali Yuga, because everybody's small, nasty tasting, everything else. So they're a species. And, if you saw them in terms of a human being, they'd be maybe 15 feet tall. If we're 5 feet tall, they'd be three times as tall, and of course, much broader and solid and bristling pig hair or something like that, and many times very deformed features. And so, for one man to kill a Rakshasa, forget it, you just smash him on the head with his fist. And then maybe five or six combined together might be able to fight with a Rakshasa and defeat him and kill him. So when Ravana heard that Ram had killed 14,000 Rakshasas, not even with a chariot, standing on the ground, without the help of a single other human being, he was thunderstruck and dumbfounded. He just couldn't believe it. I heard that at first. It was just, did you put an extra, extra 430s after this? He killed 14 Rakshasas, or he killed 140 Rakshasas before they killed him? Okay. But 14,000, it was unbelievable. But even still, after that, Krishna gave him a warning. Rama gave him a warning of who he was, everything. But he went with full consciousness right into the fire. So the Ramayana, of course, wonderful story. Ram was born, Ram and Sita weren't born to be happy. And they met. You know, so many stories about how they grew up, how Ram grew up, the sacrifice performed by what's his name, Shringi? Kind of one rishi like that, who was very, very pure from birth, everything else. He could do this to get a son. So they did that, and then Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna were born. They lived happily together. They went on the Priya Vishwamitra to defeat the Rakshasas. And he killed a lot of them, but Maricha was somehow there, was thrown in the ocean and later became the deer. And then he went to, because it was a Swayamvar, and he was able to get the hand of Sita. And even though he was quite young, I think maybe 16. And then at the same time, Maharaj Janaka had another daughter, so it was suggested that she should marry Bharata. Okay. And then somebody said, well, your brother also has two very qualified girls, so why shouldn't they become wives of Bharata? Shatrughna and Bharata. Yeah, okay. And so it was all arranged. It's a very beautiful description of the wedding. When Dasara came, he was knocking at the door. There was somebody who came, his servants. He came to the door, and he asked permission to enter the palace with his retinue and everything else, you know. And Janak sent a messenger back saying, why is the master of the house asking permission to enter his own house? Very, you know, profound etiquette and things like that. So wonder, everything looked so wonderful. They went back. On the way back, they encountered a horrible danger with Parasuram, but Ram defeated him. And now they were very happy. Omens gave indication of a bad future. And Dasarath had one black hair, so he thought, one white hair, time to quit. So maybe the same way, too, our administrators in our different societies, our institutions, when they start seeing gray hair, they should get out of these administrative positions and start being administrative counselors. Yeah. So Dasarath appointed Ram, the heir apparent. Then, of course, one Apsara, sent by the demigods, took the form of a hunchback Mantara. She poisoned Kekei's mind. And then Dasarath banished Ram. They lived in the forest, in many ways quite happy for a long time. But then Suparnaka came, and she heard about Ram's beauty, and she wanted to enjoy with him. It's very interesting because the Garga Samhita says that later on she became Kubja. So Kubja and Suparnaka, they want to enjoy with God. Again, it's like somebody who wants to only eat prasadam. You know, he won't eat bhoga, but he wants good prasadam. He wants to enjoy the prasadam. So Krishna associates with that shakti sometimes. He's there when we're doing that attitude, when we approach prasadam. But sometimes, you know, not always. But with the Hladini shakti, not represented by Kumja, but by Lakshmi, then he's always associates with her. So we should be careful to want to serve prasadam rather than want to enjoy prasadam. So then, of course, there's a whole story of Sita was kidnapped. And then, I have pictures here. Yeah. Yeah. Then he met Hanuman Sugriv, Ram. And eventually, with many different things, Hanuman was given the ring. And the other part, he went looking for Sita. So this is Hanumat Preshak. It's a name for Rama, which means he's sending a messenger. He sent Hanuman as a messenger. So Hanuman finally crossed the Indian Ocean, had different adventures in the way. He disguised himself, you know, found Sita. And then before he left, his job wasn't to bring her back, and so he didn't do that exactly. But he was able to convince her that he was servant of Ram, which was a challenge. And then finally, on the way back, before he came back, he said, well, let me get a little exercise here, and let me teach this Ravana a lesson. So he set all of Lanka on fire, and he saw Ravana's potency, and you know, gave him advice. And when finally they got back to Kishkinda, Ram thanked him so much. He said, I have nothing to give you, I'm outside my kingdom. I have nothing to offer you except my embrace. It's the only thing I can call my own. So he embraced Hanuman. And that's the rasa. Vaikuntha is only dasya rasa. But in Ayodhya, there's dasya rasa mixed with sakya rasa. So he said, in the past we have been known as four brothers. And from this day forward, we should be known as five brothers. So Brother Hanuman. And after that, of course, they went and had the whole battle, which is full of different kinds of adventures and struggles and challenges. In the end, Sita and Ram were united and lived happy for some time. Because of different circumstances, again, they were separated. So, we go ahead here. Because Ramachandra was the personality of God, and he exhibited superhuman activities which no human being, including the materially advanced Ravana, could perform. Ramachandra prepared a royal road on the Indian Ocean with stones that floated on the water. Of course, he had some nice pictures. Yeah. And probably says the scientists are trying to do this, but they can't do that. Yeah. Then from the ninth canto, of course, there's two whole chapters. You know, and there is a very nice, summary description, 9, 10, 3, 4, about the pastimes. We've already described a lot of those. But very nice, those two chapters are very nice to print for Ram Navami or what's the other festival? Ram Bijai and distribute. Yeah. Okay. And I think that's about it. So finally, the last point we made was in 519, in the 19th chapter of Canto 5. This is describing Jambadvip. And there are something in Varsha. So different Varshas or something. There are different personalities being worshipped. In one, Lakshmi is worshipping Pradyumna as Vishnu. Prahlad is worshipping Nrisimha. And in 519, the beginning, it's describing Hanuman. In Kim Purusha Varsha, worshipping Lord Ramachandra, along with a host of Gandharvas. He chants very nice prayers. Yeah. And what he says, one of them is, it was ordained that Ravana, chief of the Rakshasas, could not be killed by anyone but a man. And for this reason, Lord Ramachandra, the supreme personality of Godhead, appeared in the form of a human being. Lord Ramachandra's mission, however, was not only to kill Ravana, but also to teach mortal beings the material happiness that is centered around a sex life or centered around one's wife is the cause of many miseries. He is the self-sufficient supreme personality of Godhead, and nothing is lamentable for him. Why else could he be subjected to tribulations by kidnapping a mother Sita? So this is Krishna came to reestablish the order in the universe, but also many things, but especially this is his incarnation, is to show grihasthas, you know, show us grihastha ashram, how to do it properly. And of course, this is the point that one should not center one's life around sex life. Of course, if it's Krishna's sex life, it's okay, but we're talking about mortal beings. And it says also centered around one's wife. You know? So we can understand that that's everybody's tendency in the material world. You know, every child thinks, little child thinks that my whole family should be centered around me. Mommy with her intelligence should satisfy me. Daddy with his intelligence should satisfy me. Okay. And I want to appear humble. You know, so I have also. So, of course, in a materialistic consciousness, every woman thinks that the family life should be centered around her, you know, so on. And if the husband cooperates, you know, then the whole thing becomes distorted, becomes unpleasant for her and everybody else. So we understand that ultimately everything is centered around Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna. You know, and then everything is very happy, harmonious, Sitaram. So the same way, in the natural family arrangement, is that the children, you know, are obedient and love their mother, and the mother is obedient, loves her husband, and the husband is obedient, loves the king, and the king then loves the Brahmins, and the Brahmins love God, you know, like that. So this is the external general social arrangement like that. And for devotees, it's very natural. I imagine most of the devotees, you know, who are on the conference, they drive in America or like that on the right-hand side of the road. They don't think, I'm transcendental to this. I'm transcendental to the laws of traffic. I'm transcendental to the laws of gravity. Yeah. No, I mean, sometimes, yeah, we can do this. If we're trying to do something for Krishna, then we'll break the law. Well, it's not dangerous. You know, we can publish a little deviation for Krishna that won't later on be detected. Okay, we can, you know, early in the morning to get to Mangala Arati on time, we can run through the red lights, just take a look first, make sure it's safe. Yeah. Okay. But generally speaking, the laws are created by Krishna, and we follow them, and then he incarnates as he needs to, like that, to adjust things. So in family life, if the wife takes her husband as the center of the family's activities, he's a good man. He has to be a good man. Can't be arrogant. You know? Then everything will be smooth, and it'll be easy to develop these finer sentiments and appreciate then the internal feelings of Sita and Ram, which are all separation on the pleasure platform, like that. Okay, that's our presentation, our PowerPoint show. I don't know what happened. You know, the whole thing crashed beyond belief. I still haven't got the audio. Is anybody there listening?
We're all here listening, but of course we didn't see. I suppose if you could send me it, I could sync it in with your words, and we could see it later on.
Yeah, the problem was when I was making it, I was downloading, and there were some big files, like, you know, 597 megabytes or something. You know? I'd have to be a kilobytes. So I better maybe go back through and hit the, resizing thing on it to bring it down to a reasonable size to send, like that. Yeah. But it's fun. It's really illustrating for our mentalities. First-class person can understand this by hearing. But second-class tendencies, we have to also, you know, actually feel. Third class, you got to see, to stimulate. Yeah. Wow.
So I actually did not mute anyone. We're all unmuted. So, yeah, sorry about the glitches, Maharaj. Too bad. Internet is not always reliable. Our computers certainly aren't reliable all the time.
Yeah, I don't know what it is because my audio went. I even rebooted everything because all start meeting had this thing, it wouldn't go away. You know, I was trying to start, okay, so I had to reboot the whole thing, and then now the audio is not working on Skype. You can hear me, you say.
Yeah. We're actually listening to you over the telephone, but anyway.
Marge, I'd like to ask a question. Based on things that we've heard Prabhupada say, and based on your knowledge, the question, did we go to the moon? What is your take on that, or what is ISKCON's take on that?
I would maybe ISKCON. Let's see, ISKCON has a lot of opinions like that. Different people. My suspicion was that maybe they faked the first trip, like that. Then maybe subsequent trips they got it together and went to the gross thing, whatever it is. But. But I, looking at it, with Prabhupada's actual statements in his books, not things he said here and there, he says it's doubtful. He says even if they went to the gross thing, they didn't go to the subtle thing. But I don't think he directly says they didn't go to the moon in his books. You know, but he says it's doubtful, and he said definitely said they didn't go to the subtle thing. Of course, maybe we've all read this. There's so many different, like, not just Prabhupada. I heard that when it happened, the Germans just didn't also were extremely suspicious. You know? Then after that, there was whole books written on it. We never went to the moon, with so many bizarre, things in it. Just really bizarre. Like for example, when the lunar module is coming down, it's like dropping a full size 19 65 Cadillac out of the sky. You know? It's coming. It's like heavy, you know. And so it's coming down here, and then they fire their retro rockets, and these things are hot enough to melt most everything. You know? So there it is, and then the thing lands. Okay, lunar module. Then they show pictures of the guys walking around here and there, making footprints in the dust and kicking up dust. You know? Just right next to where the lunar module is. You know? But then the picture of the guy, you know, we never went to the moon. He says, "Nice picture, huh?" And there's the lunar module, and he says, "Where's the crater?" Like that. So this is this Cadillac falling out of the sky, firing retro rockets to slow itself down, and it didn't even disturb the dust. You know, these guys are walking around with their big footprints with their, you know, bodies, which weigh like maybe 80 pounds there, and this thing. So that's one thing as I remember, is it was unbelievable. You know? Then on the cameras, they have these crosshairs etched on the camera lens, you know, so you can identify locations and stuff exactly. So it's a picture of something, and the cross check mark, vertical is okay, you can see it, left and right is okay, and then it goes a little bit to the right of the vertical line, and it disappears behind the object. So it's etched on the camera lens, how is it disappearing, you know, behind the thing? You know? So they have several things like this, and NASA apparently has a whole web page where they go through and explain everything. Well, this and that. Well, that one was enhanced. Yeah, we just didn't. Okay. Then recently, somebody even sent for some pictures for some project, some video slides, and video, and it came back and it said something like restricted, not for release, and it was this whole thing where the guys are faking the scene of the Earth from the inside of the capsule like that and talking, you know, and so on. You know? So anyway, that's as far as I suspect, maybe the first one is. I can go on and on like this. There are many, many reasons why the first one was a good chance it was fake. And after that, I don't know, maybe they didn't fake them. They went there. You know? That's what I understand.
Okay, good answer. My thought was always that, you know, even if we did go, we don't have a body with proper sensory apparatus to perceive anything that's there of any value. There could be, you know, beautiful scenery, but without the eyes and without the ears and without the proper body, we there's no real entrance. We may be in the physical location, but so far as practical perception, just like, for example, there's beautiful music coming through our room through radio frequency or through television frequency. If you don't have the apparatus, you can't perceive any of it, even though it's there.
You're like a deaf person going to a Bible time class.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or a blind person going to the cinema. You know, you can't see. You don't have the apparatus.
Or a human being trying to experience the world of fragrances like a dog.
Hmm. Another question I was going to ask, if no one else had one, was you had mentioned in kind of a disparaging way approaching prasadam to enjoy it. You know, I certainly in the at very advanced stages that would seem to be correct. But like, you're still with us? I heard a crash there. Maria, you're still there? Okay.
Uh-huh,
so,
yeah.
Like, for example, we always talk about the sun. If something approaches the sun can purify anything, even the most filthy thing, even stool or urine is purified by approaching the sun for whatever reason. And if someone approaches prasadam because it's not different from Krishna, then even if to enjoy it, that enjoying mentality will ultimately be purified because prasadam is so potent. And then as our heart becomes purified and our false ego begins to dissolve, also become purified, then we won't have that desire to enjoy it, but rather enjoy it because it's Krishna, seeing Krishna in it, because it's reminding us of Krishna in so many ways. So it seemed like you kind of bashed the desire to enjoy prasad. I know in the beginning, and I guess even still, not just in the beginning, even at my neophyte stage, I guess I still have a tendency to enjoy prasadam. Not in the purest way, but I have confidence that it is purifying me even in that impure mentality.
Yeah, was it nice verse by Uddhava, third canto, not very famous? Ahobakiyam stanakalakutam. How's it going? Ahobakiyam stanakalakutam. There's a whole one. But he says, how can I take shelter of someone more merciful than he who bestowed the position of mother upon a witch who approached him to poison him, like that, you know? So to speak of somebody who's just trying to, we're trying to use prasadam to gratify our senses, you know, sense gratification, trying to use, you know, Sita, Ram, to gratify our senses. But that's okay. Krishna's, we're approaching, this thing depends upon how demoniac we are, how innocent we are. But in any case, it doesn't matter. Even if we're on the level of Putana, then Krishna was so kind. You know, he'll find, like you're saying, he'll find some way that we can advance like that. So I agree completely. Yeah.
Okay, good. And one more question I had, and then I'll turn it over to others. You'd mentioned something interesting that in Vaikuntha, there's Dasyaras. Is that all there is? And then you also mentioned in Ayodhya, and I may not have heard you correctly because you went kind of fast. You went right through it. But you mentioned only Dasyarath in Vaikuntha, and in Ayodhya, if there was Dasya and Sakya. Is that correct? And if so, how are we to understand the goddesses of fortune in the Vaikuntha planets? What is the rasa?
And that's what I'm remembering from my reading from Brihadbhagavatamrita, like that. Yeah, that's a good question I had too. But the Madhurya Ras of the goddesses of fortune is to massage the feet of Vishnu, and then Vaikuntha is describing in Ayodhya this description that. It's Dasya Ras mixed with Sakya Ras, like that. So it's not pure Sakya Ras.
Yeah. Maharaj,
hello.
I have a question from Luciano. If I could read it to
okay.
you, because you can't see it right since you're on Skype. And I also have a question. It's actually kind of long here. Let's see, page up. Okay, Ravana was an incarnation of the gatekeeper Vaikuntha. I have heard so many pastimes of curses from brahmanas and high pure souls, for example. Even Vishnu accepts the curse to the take from of stone. Well, take form of stones, sorry. Why are these curses so powerful that even the Lord will not break them?
I think exactly my opinion, kind of perspective, is that, you know, Krishna establishes a certain order in the universe, which is progressive. Actually, it comes to my mind now. Talking about this is 1:17:38. There we go. 1:17:38. And that's where the four principles are mentioned. As a place where Kali can reside, you know, and have his activities, the four simple activities. And Prabhupada explains that, you know, that in the Vedas, there is sacrifices for drinking wine. It's called Sautramani Yajna. There's also provision for fornication under the marriage vow, like that, you know. And so, Prabhupada says these things are definitely adharma, you know, adharma. But because they're mentioned in the Vedas for a certain kind of people and a certain level of development, and therefore we shouldn't, as you say, call them adharma, or, you know, but we have to understand how they fit into the whole scheme of things. You know? So a brahmana, he may know Brahman, but it doesn't mean he knows Paramatma. You know, more intense. He doesn't see the detailed form of Brahman. And that doesn't mean he knows, like, has any kind of a love, you know, or service attitude, you know. And so, you know, brahmanas may be powerful to some degree materially. They may curse people. But in generally speaking, you know, we should make an adjustment, and not disturb too much the order, because that allows, you know, good facility for people to advance. Yeah. But we shouldn't understand that it's just an external situation, and when the internal situation is being damaged, you know, then yeah, then we don't accept it. If a brahmana does something bad, Parasara says the king should not physically chastise him. He should not confiscate his property, but he can tell him to leave. You know, Prabhu, you've done something really bad at the temple. Now just take your things and your friends and leave. Yeah. And that's you know, description that he shouldn't deal with them roughly. And then simultaneously, because he is a Brahmin, he won't be able to lie to himself like a Kshatriya.
Yeah.
Or a Vaishya or a Shudra. Well, we can all lie to ourselves. But a Brahmana, by nature, his body and mind and intelligence are so pure that he'll see what he's doing, you know. And so the best thing is that's the best hope for correction. So the Brahmanas are very, you know, people in Brahmin bodies, very pure, very elevated in that sense. Plus they have a lot of power, and Krishna tries to keep everything going well that way. But, you know, sometimes he makes adjustments to avoid problems being created by this.
Wow, that's something. I never heard that. A Brahmana can't lie to himself. That's amazing.
You know that.
I have a question. Oh, wait. I don't know. Luciana, thank you. Maharaj. He says, thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, de nada.
De nada. So Sarpanaka, she had the chance to become Kuja in Krishna Leela.
That's in the Garga Samhita, which some people accept, some people don't accept. I think Shiva Ramaswamy accepts it. There's nothing bad about it. I don't see anything bad about it. Sometimes people say it's not exactly a Gaudiya Vaishnava scripture. But it, you know, certainly makes sense anyway. Yeah.
Well, what about the Sahajas? Also, they will. Or is there a special qualification for Sarpanaka? She had the chance to become Kuja. What about the Sahajas? Will they also eventually become purified? We can just assume that because they're coming in contact with Krishna, even though what they're doing is. You know, completely bogus.
Well, what I remember is that you know, Prabhupada says that the Sahajiyas are better situated than the Maya bodies, because he says the Maya bodies are hopelessly impersonal. But he said the Sahajiyas, at least they think Krishna is worth imitating. Yeah. Yeah. So I would say that, you know, yeah. It's, I mean, it depends. Like, I guess it's personal how damned and determined, you know, we are to make this a slow, dragged-out process, you know. Or if, God, we try with some sincerity to try and, you know, control a little bit of our lust and laziness and do something, and, you know. And then, okay, then if we're sahaja, our sahaja tendencies will help us, you know, like that, you know, trying to imitate Krishna or this and that, and, you know, it'll help us to think about Krishna and how nice Krishna must really be and how Krishna must really actually enjoy these things. And we have to find our real position in this Niras Lila. You know, a clump of grass, a fragrant flower, you know, a pleasant ray of moonshine.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's my tendency to always think that there's one formula for everything, but yeah, okay. I understand. Okay. Anything else, Prabhu? Otherwise, I'll make sure that if Maharaj, if somewhere other, you can send me your PowerPoint, I'll sync it to your voice so that, you know, we can actually see what you were speaking of.
I'll go back and try and fight with my robot and figure out what happened here. It was going fine with start meeting yesterday, and then today it went, it broke down twice. You know, and the second time when I tried to leave completely, then it wouldn't join, and the little time clock was spinning around like a madman. I couldn't turn that off, so finally I had to restart the whole thing. And on the Skype, the audio is not even working there. Okay, Hare Krishna.
All right, Prabhus, thank you very much for your association. Maharaj, we are very indebted to you for doing this. Thank you.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hey, Maharaj. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Ramananda Ji.
My pleasure, Prabhupada.
Best of luck with everybody for fighting the Ravana within.
Jai.
Arival.